someone who's done something outstanding in the field of human capital management, nominate them for Federal News Radio's second annual Causey Awards. Together, we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated, career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search award. Find news about federal information assurance and new information from various agency CISOs and CIOs on the Federal Security Spotlight on federalnewsradio.com, sponsored by Cisco.
We have a budget in real terms that's double what it was about 15 years.
Okay, Mike Causey, welcome to your turn. Glad to have you with us. We're going to have a really good show today, following the money as per usual. We're going to start off with the two Steves, Steve Watkins, who is editor of the Federal Times newspaper, and Steve Losey, who is a senior writer for the Federal Times. And between the two of them, they sort of cover the waterfront, and we're going to get to it. Gentlemen, are you with us? Can't hear anybody. The Steves, are you there? Okay. Hey, thanks for coming on again. You know, there's so much to talk about. I don't know where to begin. Let me start out here with a couple of emails we got, and maybe we can deal with that. This is from David W. He's with Food and Drug Administration. I'm a federal employee with 34 years of service, and I'm retiring on October 3rd of this year. I'm concerned about the potential for Congress to change the high three to the high five before I retire. Are you aware of any proposed bills in either the Senate or the House that contain these issues? I know there's been a bit of rhetoric about the issue. Thanks in advance, David. Here's from Barbara in the Navy. I've been working for the government for 38 years. I'm 58 years old. I enjoy my job and wasn't thinking of retiring until 2013, if then. After hearing about the possibility of the high three to high five, I'm worried that they are, and maybe I should rethink my plan. If you were me, would you put your retirement papers in now? If they do change to a high five, will there be a time frame when people like myself will be able to file our paperwork and get out under the high three? And then from Rita with the Air Force, with the potential changes of the federal workforce, the high three to high five, I'm thinking about putting in my retirement papers. I'm at Randolph Air Force Base, and I anticipate that there will be a logistical nightmare with people jumping ship if we go from high three to high five. What's the deal on that?
Well, we don't know. We haven't seen a bill get introduced yet that actually would go from a high three to high five. It's something that's been discussed. It was part of the White House's Deficit Reduction Commission report that they came out with last December. That report got voted down, but of course some of the Republicans in the House particularly are very interested in what it had to say. So while we haven't seen a bill that actually would switch from a high three to high five, it's still out there, it's still floating, and I wouldn't recommend anybody, beat a path to their HR office today to put in their papers if they are absolutely very concerned about this. But just keep an eye out. And like I said, there hasn't been a bill yet, so we don't know what the time frame would look like if it would get introduced and if it does get passed. But I got to imagine there would be a bit of a window for people to get out before they go to a high five. But like I said, there isn't a bill yet, so we'll just have to wait and see what comes out about
it. Right. So the good news is this evil baby hasn't been born yet, but that doesn't mean it's not out there. And clearly, given the congressional process, people would have plenty of warning, surely, to know whether they should retire under the high three or the high five. And as you say, since the bill hasn't even been introduced, we can only assume that it would be prospective. That is, it would apply to people retiring after a certain date and that they wouldn't reach back and grandfather in people who are currently working.
Well, the Deficit Commission obviously got all this debate started with its report last year and recommended this idea of moving to a high three, a high five, and it proposed starting that in 2015. Now, as Steve said, I think the details of all this are all movable, and we will see what happens. I would expect it to be introduced at some point in Congress by somebody. Of course, we've already seen even more drastic bills, such as one introduced last week by Senators Coburn and Burr from North Carolina, that would do away with FERS altogether. And again, I think we're going to be seeing a lot of proposals. What actually has mustered to pass through both chambers of Congress and get signed by the president is a whole other matter. And I would expect whatever makes it that far and gets signed into law will be a far more measured proposal. And, you know, what's interesting is going to be whether there's some hearings on this. We're not aware of any being planned or scheduled at this point. But, you know, things in Congress seem to be moving both slowly and quickly. What we've seen is, no activity for extended periods, and then suddenly a huge omnibus or a CR with all sorts of add-ons done in the late of night. And so, you know, hopefully whatever gets through on this will get some degree of discussion and debate.
Well, you know, between the three of us, Steve Watkins, Steve Losey, and myself, we have been covering Congress forever, it seems. I mean, many, many, many decades of Congress watching, and I have never seen any situation like this as concerns to the federal workforce or retirees. Have you?
No, I can't say I have seen just the intense level of focus on issues like federal pay and federal retirement. In my years covering Congress, it's really unprecedented, and it really is kind of coming about because of A, the lingering poor economy and people's concerns over, and two, people's concerns over the deficit, which the so-called Tea Party lawmakers kind of came into Congress riding that wave. And I think those two combined has resulted in this very sharp laser focus from especially the new Republicans on how federal employees are paid, the size of the federal workforce, and whether the government is spending too much on these matters.
And I think part of the problem here, Mike, is that it's very difficult for lawmakers to find anything to cut that gets people excited and has some popular backing. All the areas that are going to save real money when it comes to deficit spending are areas that generally the public doesn't want to cut or touch. And we've seen that with recent polls that certainly the America very, very much by wide margins wants to reduce the deficit. But every time you throw out options for how to do that, they hate those even more. So the one area that seems to be, the most popular, I guess, is federal pay and benefits, and so I think we're seeing that.
Well, I think that's a good point, and you can go back. This seems to be cyclical. When the economy is bad, federal employment is steady. It keeps going. The government keeps rolling along. The checks keep coming out, and it becomes very popular to make federal workers bureaucrats, whipping boys.
Right, especially when a lot of the other options that are even more effective for cutting spending are highly unpopular.
Right. Do you want to cut the salary of some bureaucrat, or do you want to cut your Social Security benefit,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I got, when you mentioned this other thing, this latest thing, which is reality, changing the high three to the high five, and that is basing future annuities on the highest five-year average salary. I've seen figures of anywhere from a couple of hundred to several thousand dollars as to what this would do to somebody's annuity in the future. Have you done the numbers?
Unfortunately, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it would probably take a good sized chunk out of or bite out of somebody's pension.
Right. Well, we ran one, and I think we said something like the average would be a $1,500 a year reduction in what people had anticipated, and got a lot of mail from people who were much better at numbers than we are, and they said, no, it's all over the place. But it, I think one guy had something like it would cost him $3,900 a year.
That could be. I really think it depends on everybody's situation, and obviously, you know, the salaries, you know, someone at the SES level is going to have a completely different outcome as opposed to someone who's retiring as a GS-9.
Absolutely. Let me ask you about this, the reality bill, the changing the FERS system, and when we come back here on after a break here on 1500 AM.
American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and Grantham University. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday mornings at 10, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What is the U.S. Department of the Treasury doing to implement financial reforms? How is it promoting management and organizational excellence? How is Treasury leveraging technology and innovation to be more efficient and effective? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and more with Dan Tangerlini, Assistant Secretary of the Treasury for Management and Chief Financial Officer. That's next week on the Business of Government Hour.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
Defense Secretary Robert Gates and others say the U.S. military's role will shrink in the coming days in Libya as other countries take on more missions and there is less of a need for large-scale action. Tomahawk cruise missiles fired by U.S. ships and submarines off the coast of Libya have been a part of that action. Senior Defense Department officials indicate the attacks have reduced Libya's air defense capabilities by almost half. Libyan ground forces are still very active. I'm J.J. Green.
When you fly over the North Pole, do you ever think about how remote you are? Airink does, and that's why they have it covered. They're the only company in the world that provides high-frequency data links so that pilots can always communicate with someone on the ground. Airink ensures you're never alone at 35,000 feet. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
Ugh, would you look at this bill?
Tired of paying way too much to your alarm company and not getting real security service? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems and pay just $18.95 a month, and there's no cost to switch. Why Ackerman? Ackerman has more than 40 years of industry-leading experience and was recently named Dealer of the Year out of over 30,000 companies. Ackerman has its own UL and CSAA 5 Diamond Certified Monitoring Center. Put simply, with Ackerman Security Systems, you get the most qualified professionals in the industry monitoring your home for just $18.95 a month. Over 180,000 people enjoy peace of mind with Ackerman. So whether you want a new system or want to switch to reliable monitoring for just $18.95 a month, call 888-999-1070, 888-999-1070, or visit AckermanSecurity.com. Federal employees call today and get 4 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service.
Hey, Caps fans, place a deposit for full season tickets now and reserve your spot for the 2011-2012 season. Deposits are fully refundable and can be used towards other ticket purchases while retaining your place in line for full season plans next season. For more info on placing your full season ticket deposit, call 202-266-CAPS or log on to WashingtonCaps.com and do your part in building America's hockey capital.
Don't miss the first annual Backgammon Beating Cancer Tourney, Saturday, February 26th, to benefit the wellness community, providers of free programs of emotional support, education, and hope for people with cancer and their loved ones. Beginners to experts are welcome. For more information, call David Ogden at 301-717-7166. For more information about the wellness community of Greater Washington, call 301-493-5002. All programs at the wellness community are provided free of charge.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Steve Watkins, editor of the Federal Times, and Steve Losey, senior writer for the Federal Times. And we really had to start off with the high five, the high three. And as you guys well know, this proposal comes up every year in the form of an option, usually from the Congressional Research Service or Congressional Budget Office or someone. And you know, we all know that it's not going to happen, and it has a run, and then it goes away. But I think given the mood of the Congress, given the economic situation of the country, and given the fact that this was in the bipartisan deficit reduction report, which presumably is supported by the president, and he said he would support whatever they came up with, this is a much more of a real threat than before, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. I was just researching, again, reminding myself of the history of FERS, for instance, and it came up in a very similar environment. Social Security was, at that time, under siege. There were a lot of concerns nationally about the integrity and financial strength of Social Security, and President Reagan appointed basically a commission to look at the Social Security program and recommend ways to strengthen it. And it was through that, basically, that FERS evolved, that there was a sense that feds had to be part of the Social Security program as one way to help strengthen it, among others. And so FERS was basically created to do that. And when the Social Security benefit essentially became effective for federal employees, it no longer made sense to continue with CSRS. And at that time, there also was a public sentiment that federal employees were getting benefits that were quite generous, and that was the public mood at the time. And so FERS dialed back on the pension side of it, and then Congress, of course, added Thrift Savings Plan and the Social Security and COLA benefits, and that's what we have today. So I think there's some analogy here to the mood that existed back then.
You know, I had forgotten that completely, but you're exactly right. And the irony of it is I got a call the other day from Jamie Cowan, and he was an assistant top aide to Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska, and he and some people from the Congressional Research Service, with help from the National Active and Retired Federal Employees, they literally wrote the FERS bill and the idea of the FERS plan, and the idea was to make it like the most generous of private sector plans. A reduced civil service benefit, about half what people would get under the old civil service retirement system, but with that 5% government match for the thrift savings plan, the 401k plan, which is the tantamount to a 5% tax deferred pay raise. And so now history is repeating itself. It looks like, according to Senators Coburn and who's the other?
Burr,
yeah, they want to do away with the government component, the civil service component altogether. I got an email here from Mary, and she said, I read this morning from a NARF email that S-644 proposes to end pensions for all new federal hires. Have you heard about it? What can you tell us about it? And I know you guys covered it and wrote about it, and our Jolie Lee here on Federal News Radio wrote about it. And I was looking at her story and the comments from people, and there are some angry folks out there. What does this bill purport to do? I know we talked about it briefly.
Well, basically it would, for anyone hired in 2013 and after, they would not get the defined benefit pension portion of the FERS system. They would still get the TSP matching funds. They would still get Social Security, but they wouldn't get the pension that FERS employees currently enjoy.
So when this thing was designed, when FERS was designed, it was described as a three-legged stool. That is Social Security, the federal civil service benefit, and your savings from FERS and whatnot. So this would remove one of those legs.
Yep, that's right.
What do you think, I mean, just, I know this is brand new, and I had not seen this coming, but what do you think this would do to government recruiting?
It wouldn't help it, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It's certainly possibly could hurt recruiting, but you know, most people, young people, when they're looking for their first jobs, aren't generally thinking towards the future. They should be, but they just often aren't. You hear about, I hear the TSP people, the people on the TSP board talk a lot about wanting to encourage younger people to invest, and sometimes they don't. So I don't know if I would say that this would take a big chunk out of the federal recruitment, but it would certainly be a blow to federal employees by taking away a big part of what, you know, they were promised.
I do think it would have a big impact. You know, the federal government is trying to do more in terms of recruiting folks, particularly at the mid-career level as well. And, in fact, FERS was designed to try to accommodate that. In other words, allow people a pension package that was more portable, transportable, that they can move in and out of government and take their TSP and roll it over to a 401k if they decide to leave. And I think that is sort of where the focus is these days as well, that there's a sense amongst, for instance, John Berry at OPM and other human resources experts that the federal government no longer should be looking at the recruitment challenge as bring someone in for a whole career, but rather bring someone in for a few years, and then they would leave and then come back, and there would be a lot more portability. And I think that's probably going to be the case, certainly if they get rid of a pension. I don't see that happening personally. I'd be highly surprised to see something like that pass through Congress. But even diminishing the pension dimension of the pay and benefits package would certainly encourage more of that moving in and out of government and reducing it as a career, I think, in the minds of a lot of folks. So it would certainly change the dynamic of the federal employee a lot. And I think Steve's probably right. It probably would have less impact, certainly, for folks right out of college. But for people at the mid-career stage, working at companies or nonprofits who are thinking about, career options, I think they would look at that and shake their heads.
Well, that's right, because when they originally set up FERS, the then General Accounting Office, now Government Accountability Office, GAO did a study, and it said that less than a third of the people who actually come into government and work for the government actually make a career out of it. So for those one-third of the people, the old civil service retirement system was far and away the best going. But for the majority of people who came into government and then went somewhere else, FERS was the plan of choice because of the portability. They could take the 401k with them, and the benefits were, they were less vested in civil service benefits. And this Coburn bill proposal could change that again and make it, instead of, you might even drop the word government career. You'd just say you're doing, it'd be like being drafted in the Army, going in for a short period of time and then doing other things and coming back.
Yeah, that's right. And, but like I say, you know, I would be extremely surprised. I obviously things are, as we mentioned, things are at a kind of a, I think the pendulum is swung as far as we've seen it in terms of the animosity, I guess, against federal benefits that exists out there. But I still would be surprised to see, at this point anyway, a federal pension completely removed. Now, if after the next election, we can come back to this and see how the landscape looks. But I think with this Congress, I don't see it happening.
Well, that's sort of one of the ironies of the nature of this Congress, too, is that the bill that has not been introduced yet, is neither in the House or Senate, the high three to high five, is the one that's scaring people the most. The one that has been introduced, of course, it's newer, but has less of a chance of becoming law, even though the other one hasn't been introduced. Need to take a short break here. We'll be right back on 1500 AM, talking with Steve Watkins, Steve Losey of the Federal Times.
Tune in
to The Federal Drive every weekday morning from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Hear news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. Tom and Amy will give you the information you need to help explain and navigate your world. Listen on the radio at Federal News Radio 1500 AM, morning 6 to 10, or go to federalnewsradio.com and click Listen Live. The Federal Drive is sponsored by Symantec Confidence in a connected world.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday at 10 a.m. here on Federal News Radio. This week, my special guest will be John Walcott, Chief Content Officer and Editor-in-Chief of Smart Brief. That's Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday, brought to you by the law firm of Odin, Feldman & Pittleman. Visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
And now, the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Your options for using telework centers are shrinking. GSA is defunding more than a dozen D.C. area telework centers. Half are closing. The other half will keep operating in the private sector. The telecenters cost about $3 million a year to operate. They give feds a place to work close to home without having to commute into offices. GSA officials say advances in mobile technologies like iPads and BlackBerries offer options for telework beyond just the centers. I'm Amy Morris.
Attention all civilian federal employees. Did you know that there is a nonprofit association founded in 1943 that provides life insurance at rates far less than the federal program and also offers annual premium refunds and a college scholarship program? The company's name is WEPA. WEPA enables federal employees to purchase better life insurance at far better prices. To learn more about WEPA's low premium rates and refund history, visit WAEPA.org. Again, that's WAEPA.
Here's Dave Epperson, CIO NPPD, DHS on the Federal Executive Forum at the DHS CIO Roundtable Live from the 2011 FCA Homeland Security Conference.
They're just focusing on information sharing, doing the backbone of that and doing knowledge management so that we have fidelity information and that information can be tracked and how it's used so we can start targeting what can be used with our resources.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Join AFSEA for critical issues in C4I, May 24th through 25th at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. Together with the George Mason University C4I Center for Excellence, AFSEA brings you the experts in cloud computing, network security, and military use of commercial IT. Exhibit and sponsorship opportunities are available. Register and collaborate with your colleagues today at www.afsea.org, keyword GMU. The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. 9 individuals from 3 unrelated families are the only people known to have a rare, painful vascular condition. The pain is from calcium buildup in arteries below the waist and in joints of the hands and feet. Dr. William Gall with the National Human Genome Research Institute and the NIH Undiagnosed Diseases Program says the disease is caused by one gene.
The NT5E gene is, like many other genes, it encodes a protein, and the protein is called CD73, and that's what makes it special.
He explains a deficit stops the protein production, and that leads to the calcification. For details, visit www.nhgri.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
We Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Federal Times Steve Watkins. He's the editor, and Steve Losey is senior correspondent for Federal Times. And we're sort of going through the Rocky Horror Show here of what's happening to federal workers and retirees on the Hill. Before we leave, take care of the retirement things. There are a number of other things that are floating around out there, either in as ideas or as legislation. Do you have a laundry list?
Yeah, there's quite a long laundry list. Obviously, a lot of this started with the Deficit Reduction Commission and some of the ideas, and I expect we're going to see more of those same proposals come out in new legislation in the coming months. But some of the things that we've hit on are, for instance, the bill by Kevin Brady that the Cuts Act that would freeze pay for a third year. Obviously, the Deficit Commission report recommended a three-year freeze, and the Obama administration ended up supporting a two-year freeze. That same bill would also cut the workforce by 10%, or about 200,000 people, and also has some enforcement provisions regarding unpaid taxes owed by federal employees, military personnel, and retirees. Then we have the bill by Congressman Mike Kaufman of Colorado that would impose a two-week furlough on federal employees, not this year, but next year, 2012. Then we have another bill that I would call an outlier by Senator Rand Paul, which would eliminate vast swaths of the federal government. We don't have a bill yet by Dennis Ross, but I expect he's the chairman of the House Personnel Subcommittee. But we do know that he's told us in interviews that he is working on something that likely will come out later this year, probably in fall, late summer, fall, something like that. A proposal to reform the federal personnel system. We don't really know anything about that yet. Steve can talk more at length on that, but basically his focus is on trying to bring more of a performance dimension to the federal personnel system. We have another bill by Congresswoman Loomis from Wyoming that would again, slash the size of the workforce and not freeze hiring, but certainly reduce it considerably. So there's a whole slew of things out there. Again, I think, what actually is going to be able to pass through both houses of Congress is another matter.
Well, you get the feeling, certainly I do, covering this beat, that it's deja vu all over again. You know, when they talk about Congressman Ross, and I remember reading it at the time, that he wanted to introduce a pay-for-performance system into the government. Well, we just got rid of one in the National Security Personnel System. You know, that was hot, and then it was out, and now somebody's talking about reinventing the wheel.
Yeah, I think one thing that I found interesting in my conversations with Congressman Ross is that he specifically rejected reviving NSPS. He said it was an abject failure. It doesn't sound like he wants to revive the past system or expand anything that's currently around, but he wants to try to come up with some new way that would address the union's concerns. He says he wants to bring the unions to the table. The unions obviously had some very significant concerns about NSPS, the TSA's past system. So he wants to create a more performance-based way of paying federal employees, but he wants to try to engage all the parties as they do so. And that was, I think, one of the big mistakes the Bush administration made, is they really created this NSPS system without union input and said, here's what it is, here's NSPS, it is what it is, and like it.
Can you envision something, though, coming up like this that would that the unions would buy into, particularly if it came from the Republicans?
No, it doesn't sound that way right now. The unions are very opposed to replacing the GS system, to implementing some kind of a new pay performance system. They say the current system works just fine, and they say that introducing more subjectivity into the system through a performance-based aspect would be a disaster. Now, if their hands were forced, if they, you know, if it became obvious that something was going to happen with or without them, who knows? Maybe they could change their tune. But right now, they're not on board with this at all.
Well, the other thing that that one member of Congress has talked about, maybe it's Senator Grassley, talked about outsourcing tax collections, and there again, deja vu all over again, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. There was a big policy debate in Congress in recent years over that. It was tried, and essentially, no one really liked it except for the Republicans. The IRS didn't want it. Certainly, the unions didn't want it. But in fact, IRS was essentially forced by Congress to hire contractors to go out and collect unpaid taxes. And there was certainly money collected, but the studies that were done showed that the federal employees, IRS employees, who were doing that, showed much higher rates of return in terms of the amount of money that was collected.
Well, some of that, too, in addition to being an initiative for in favor of people who want the government to do less and contractors to do more, but part of this grew out of the real but mostly alleged abuses of the IRS, you know, browbeating taxpayers and being mean, and there were congressional hearings on the subject, and the outcome of that was this plan to let contractors collect uncollected taxes from deadbeats and whatnot and give them a percentage of it. Then the IRS did a study of that and found that they could do a better job. I think they had a 10-to-1 ratio to in returning money to the Treasury. But and then Congressman Grassley has countered and said that the IRS study or the GAO study itself was flawed.
Yeah, I can't analyze what GAO found. I mean, I give them a lot of kudos in general. I think they do very good work. I don't know. All the studies I've seen, including by IRS itself, have shown that the IRS employees do a far better job than contractors. And partly that's a reflection of the fact that the contractors are given the what they call the low-hanging fruit.
Yeah.
So the easy case is basically that they can just go out and round up, but the IRS employees end up getting the more sophisticated cases that require a lot more work and in-house or institutional knowledge.
Well, that's one of the knocks for the Postal Service, too, is that it must take a letter from Washington, D.C. to Hawaii or Alaska, but places like UPS and FedEx can again, take the low-hanging fruit and skip the expensive routes or charge more for them.
Right. Yeah.
You guys were threatening to break news the other day. Did you come up with something?
Yeah. One thing that has been discussed as pay reform has been battered around by the various parties is whether the general schedule does a decent job holding poor performers accountable. The unions say, well, it does, because, yes, we do have these step increases that more or less happen every 1, 2, or 3 years, but if someone's not cutting it, the manager can withhold those step increases, and that's the reason the unions say the general schedule is a good system. It occurred to me that we never actually saw any numbers on exactly how often that happens, so I started bugging the Office of Personnel Management and just the other day got some figures, and the number of step increases that are withheld for reasons of poor performance is surprisingly small. In 2009, it was 737 people out of more than 1.2 million GS employees, and that works out to roughly 1 in 1,700 workers, or 0.06%. And you could look at it as saying that, well, it just proves that federal employees are 99.94% great, but most people I spoke to said it's really a sign that the government's performance accountability is not cutting it, and needs to be improved.
You know, ironically, that's very interesting, fascinating numbers. And Suzanne Kubota, our internet editor, brought that to my attention this morning. I didn't realize you guys were the source, but that's great. The Carter administration referred to those raises as being their raises, as in the Peter Sellers movie. You know, we're just showing up and staying on the job and breathing. You get an automatic 3% raise every 1, 2, or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Unions have said that's not true. That it can be a tool. But what you're showing is so far they are being their raises, aren't they?
It's a hollow threat. Withholding raises is a hollow threat, really. And people disagree over what the problem is. I went back to the union, specifically the National Treasury Employees Union, and said, well, what do you say about this? And mm-hmm. their response was, if there's a problem, the fault lies with managers.
Right.
They say the managers aren't being, to them, it's apparent that managers aren't being trained well enough, and that managers need to do a better job tracking their employees' performance, holding them accountable. But other people I've spoken to, including groups as very different as the Cato Institute and the Partnership for Public Service, say that the problem is that federal managers just think it's not worth it. It's too much of a headache. They spend months and months, if they want to withhold someone's raise, fighting appeals. It could go to the Merit Systems Protection Board. It could cause strife in the workplace.
Right, and you can have discrimination suits and all of that.
Exactly.
Well, Jens, listen, that's fascinating numbers. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll talk to you next week. And coming up, we're going to be talking about how young, healthy federal workers can save on life insurance, and how older, maybe less healthy or more physically challenged feds can do very well going with Uncle Sam's Fegley program. So we'll be right back here on 1500 AM.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every Friday morning at 11 o'clock. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to FedTalk@FederalNewsRadio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO.
This week, host Deborah Roth will be joined by career coach Catherine Troutman of The Resume Place to discuss the current federal hiring outlook and how to land a federal job.
Looking to get more from your technology investment? Look to HP Desktop Computing, powered by Vision Pro technology from AMD. Together, HP and AMD deliver more desktop computers with exceptional visual performance, enhanced energy efficiency, and advanced security features. Available in a range of sleek, space-saving designs. Give everyone in your agency the power to perform at a price that makes it possible. Give them the power of HP and AMD. To find out how, go to hp.com/go/perform.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
The National Archives and Records Administration is in charge of coordinating the declassification of once secret records, but NARA estimates manually reviewing the classified documents generated by the intelligence community could take up to 20 million full-time employees. So they're turning to a technology called context accumulation. It trains computers to sort records into virtual bins that should be either withheld or released, and to consult a human being if they're not sure.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
The Virtualization Expert is brought to you by VMware and Carahsoft.
This is Aileen Black, Vice President of VMware Federal. In a recent study, federal IT leaders said telework and delivering desktop computing resources are the top reasons for using cloud computing. There is no question, telework is a priority, and VMware customers know how easy it can be with virtualization. With VMware, agency standard PCs can be quickly provisioned, deployed, and managed from the data center. Personnel can securely access familiar resources through government-furnished equipment or their own PCs. Our customers have saved up to 45% on desktop cost, increased their employee satisfaction, and improved continuity of operations. If your agency wants to deliver desktop computing as a service, You'll want to see how easily you can do it with VMware.
VMware desktop virtualization solutions are helping federal agencies deliver desktop capabilities to personnel for telework and continuity of operations. To learn more, visit thevirtualizationexpert.com.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Chad Fulghum is the FBI's chief information officer. He says the $300 million Sentinel case management system will hit a big deadline this summer by launching a new set of functionalities.
Our initial operating capability, IOC, means that our agents and analysts will be able to do a case from beginning to end. They can open the case, they can do the documents, they can do the workflow. We've got the data model, the security model, the notifications framework, at least some amount of alerting, reporting.
CIOs and IT directors, is your network-attached storage infrastructure out of control? Do you have dozens and dozens of NAS appliances that are difficult to administer? Ask the experts at Vion Corporation how Hitachi's high-performance NAS, powered by BlueArc, can consolidate your NAS infrastructure, reduce your number of NAS appliances, and improve your NAS performance. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
For 11 years, government leaders have gathered to explore the latest mandates and best practices at the Government Performance Summit. Today, with a major revision to the Government Performance and Results Act, there is an unparalleled opportunity to integrate analytics into better decision-making for the entire nation. Join hosts the Performance Institute, FMA, AGA, and GovEvents, April 4th through the 6th for the 11th Annual Government Performance Summit. Space is limited, so register today at governmentperformance.org.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. We just finished an interesting discussion and brought me up to speed on a lot of things. We're talking with Steve Watkins and Steve Losey of the Federal Times. And if you want to hear it again or tell a friend about it, remember our shows are archived on our homepage. So just go to the Your Turn section and click on the date you're interested in and you can hear it anytime. Now I'm going to be talking to federal workers about ways to save money on life insurance. Now, there are ways to save if you're younger. There are ways to not only save and but be eligible for life insurance if you're older. And there's one option that will let people actually get refunds, rebates on their premiums. And we're going to be talking with John Montague. He's executive director of WAPA.
John, the initials WAPA, Washington is a city of anachronisms, but WAPA is Worldwide Assurance for Employees of Public Agencies.
That's absolutely correct.
Is that right? Yeah. And I mean, you guys started in the 1940s?
We were founded in 1943, and we had the same acronym, WAPA, back then, but it was the War Agencies Employee Protective Association.
War agencies, a different
time.
War Department before the Defense
Department.
Yeah,
exactly.
Interesting times.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's evolved now. And I know benefit strategist John Elliott, who works for NITP and is a frequent guest on various shows here. John is a big fan of people shopping outside of Fegley. Fegley is Federal Employees Group Life Insurance. And correct me if I'm wrong, but Fegley is open to every federal worker, regardless of age, health, that sort of thing.
Yes.
And every Fed has a chance to get in it. So it's a very good deal if you're older, if you're in bad health, if you have any kind of problem. It's a very good deal. And John agrees with that. But he says if you're younger, if you're in good health, and can qualify for other insurance, whether it's a group plan or a single plan, like WAPA. He's a big fan of WAPAs. It's a good deal. How come? Why the difference?
Well, the main difference is with the Fegley program, they accept every single individual. So as a result, in many cases, they have individuals who are, quite frankly, not in the best of health. So as a result, the people who are – in good health, or in effect paying a higher premium than they would otherwise if they shopped around to an external carrier, such as ourselves, WEPA, where those carriers take into account the health conditions of the applicants. And as a result, the rates that are charged by the insurance carrier are significantly less.
Okay, it makes sense. And group plans, you know, we all know the beauty of group plan, and the beauty is it covers everybody in that group. The downside is it covers everybody in that group.
Exactly.
And you have to take into account the actuarial risks and that sort of thing. And we were discussing before the show, talking about WEPA. You give rebates or refunds?
Yes, we've established a premium refund policy actually back in 1996. And since that time, we've processed 14 annual refunds. And during that time period, our policyholders have received over $52 million back in return premiums. This past year, we had a 25% refund, and all members received a 25% refund. And in total, we gave out over $6.4 million just last September.
Is that 25% of their premium?
25% of what they paid. So, for example, if your annual premium was $1,000, you would have received a check back from WEPA for $250.
Can't beat that. And you can do it because you're a nonprofit.
We're a nonprofit, and our claims experience is very healthy. Our block of business, our membership, is a very healthy group, and as a result, we're in a position to return those excess premiums. Since again, as you said, we're a nonprofit and not a for-profit company.
Okay, that's fascinating. And any federal worker is eligible to apply for WEPA. That doesn't mean they're going to get in, but they're eligible to apply?
Yes. We insure civilian federal employees, not employees of the military, although we do insure civilian employees who work for the military
agencies.
Okay, so
if you're a defense, a GS-11 at defense,
you would be eligible to apply for WEPA.
If you're a military, a uniform military, not
correct.
Okay. You mentioned you're doing scholarships now?
Yes, that's a program our board established back in 2007. And again, being a nonprofit, we want to do more for our members than just provide them insurance coverage. So back in 2007, we established a college scholarship program for the children of our members. That program today, we give out 65 scholarships on an annual basis and pay out over $120,000 in scholarship funds each year. It's extremely rewarding to see the applicants we have for this program. The kids are simply brilliant, very good students, and it's also based on their extracurricular activities, their goals, and not just the grade point average. But it really just gives you a great sense for the future when you see kids of this quality and what they're striving to do in their academic career.
Federal workers are lucky in that respect, federal and postal, because you have outfits like FEA, Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund, and they give out scholarships that are financed by federal workers themselves and by corporations like GEICO and Blue Cross. And then the National Active and Retired Federal Employees has a scholarship program, I guess you'd think, for the grandchildren or children of NARF members too. So there are a lot of things going.
There's a lot of outlets, and it's a great thing because anyone who has college age students this time knows how expensive college is, and any assistance that can be gained is extremely important to these families.
Well, you know something, I get a funny feeling when I talk about it, but with FEA, for instance, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund, you know, it's a feds helping feds charity. After Oklahoma City, FEA made a pledge, along with their corporate sponsors, that every child of someone who was killed or injured in Oklahoma City would get a full ride scholarship to any school in the world they could get into. And that included one child who had not yet been born, but his father was killed in the Oklahoma City bombing. And there's still, as you can imagine, it's an ongoing program because you had children from ages, literally age zero to in their teens, and they're now still funding the scholarship program. And some of the kids, I think one or two actually got into Oxford, but any school you can qualify for, so that's a good deal. Okay, back to WEPA now. Are your premiums are structured? Are they based on age?
Yes, it's very similar to the FEGLI program. The premiums are based on five-year age bands, exactly like the federal program, except our premiums are significantly less than the Fegley program.
And obviously, the younger you are when you go in, the less
yes,
you pay.
the lower the premium. So the sooner you enroll, the more money you can save over the time you have the insurance coverage.
Okay, and one more time, the refunds you gave, you gave a 25% refund. Was it last year?
Last year we gave a 25% refund. Every member received 25% of their annualized premium back, and we've done the refunds again since 1996. Every year except one, we've actually returned 25% of the individual's premium. The one year we gave a 10% refund. Another year we didn't have the refund, we actually